You can find Level Up Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at lulpodcast. You can also subscribe to Level Up Language Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. On this week's episode, we will be talking about the IPA, Integrated Performance Assessment. How we've started that here in Davis School District, why we started using it, and the basic anatomy of what an IPA is. With that, let's get into Level Up. Welcome to this week's episode on the IPA. My name is Davin Lemke. I will be one of your hosts along with Brandon Welker and Miles Nance. We're still missing Roger Burt. Hopefully he'll join us here shortly. And it's good to be back. I've missed being on the podcast the last couple of weeks as we went to an ACTFL training and then Thanksgiving break and other things that took our time. So it's probably a good thing I'm back too. I found Miles crying behind the computer when I returned and took me a while to find Brandon, but I eventually found him in a corner in the fetal position, so.
We just missed you.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was.
So. How was Nashville?
Nashville was great. The food was amazing. Oh, and also the conference, I guess I should talk about that. ACTFL conference was good. We had some really good training, specifically on the IPA, which is what we're going to talk about today. So, let's get into the IPA. Originally how we started using the IPA in our school district in Davis County. We originally had a mid-year end-of-year assessment for levels 1, 2, and 3, which was just a writing assessment. And that's all we were using for a tool to really gauge where our students were. So we all teach at the high school level. We have a lot of feeder junior high schools that come in the sophomore year as 10th graders. And every year that we've been here, Roger and I would discuss, and then when Miles and Brandon came along, we'd talk about how we don't know a lot about those students that are coming in. We didn't have a lot of data on them. We had the general data for each school's performance according to the language, but we didn't know anything about how well students had performed in the classes prior to coming to us. Plus, I don't know how it is for you guys. Your numbers are a lot different. My numbers, I'm getting students from 5, 6, 7 different teachers. It takes some time to get used to where all those students are. Most of the time, students are right on track. They're ready to go. But it's nice to know as much as you can about those students. And a lot of people will say, well, just look at their grade. Well, grades actually don't tell us anything, to be honest. Grades are arbitrary, and all of us grade differently and have different assignments that we do. So we talked to our district supervisor and we asked if we could start doing a placement assessment. If we really want our students to progress in the language and to master the language, we didn't want to pass them according to seat time on to the next level. We want to make sure that when they move to the next level in the language, it's because they have achieved the skills and the standards necessary to make sure that they can succeed at the next level rather than just passing them on every year. And they get whatever grade they get, and they get as far as they can in the language. So we took that to our district supervisor. It was approved. She took it up to her boss, and we went all the way up to the superintendency. So that's been approved, and that's the measure that we're taking, is we're going to begin using the IPA to help us place our students according to how well they have mastered the language by the end of the year to determine what level of class or the proficiency level that they should go through.
I just want to jump in right there. With that placement, it doesn't necessarily mean directly that the teacher's doing a bad job or that the student's stupid.
Right.
It doesn't get it. Sometimes, as we know as instructors, it just takes longer for some student to get it.
Right.
And rather than just saying, yeah, you did French 1, Spanish 1, let's move you into 2, let's actually make sure that you
should foundation.
Be there. Mm-hmm. So when you get there, you aren't stressed and you're already stressed because of everything else in life. Right. You aren't more stressed. So I just want to stress that. And we'll talk about it more in an upcoming episode. I think it might even be next week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk about that more specifically. I just want to make sure that people know that doesn't mean you're a bad teacher, that they're dumb as students. Sometimes they just need a little bit more time to get that confidence. So.
And that's the point. Every student is going to be different. Most students will progress just fine. I would say, especially at the lower levels, level 1, 2, 3, for the most part, students will go along. You get to the higher levels, You guys can attest to this more in Roger if he ever comes, that a higher level, sometimes the higher levels are even harder to move through once you get up to intermediate mid.
They take a long time.
It can take longer for students to get there. And that's okay. There's so many factors that influence students' learning, but we do need the data. And it will reflect on the teacher in the sense that the IPA and assessments, we use those to adjust our instruction and inform our instruction, but it's not something to be taken personally at all. But the best thing about it is we're making our foreign language program here in the district very, very, very proficiency-based and student-centered.
Yeah, and I would add with the benefit of the IPA where it's three modalities that you're measuring, the three modes basically, interpretive, interpersonal, and presentational, we're measuring students on more than just writing. Now, where it's my third year, my first couple of years, I thought I focused a fair amount on reading and speaking and listening. But based on my scores recently, I haven't. And that's something I know I need to do a better job at. But I mean, maybe it was subconsciously where the only district assessment was writing. Maybe subconsciously that's what we focus on more. And that's not really all there is to the communication. There's a lot more to it. So that's one reason I really like the IPA is measuring for the different modes.
I'd point out too that even though the impetus for the whole IPA being introduced was being able to put kids in the right classes, the benefits are all around better for, or there are benefits for everybody because we have kids in the right classes that aren't frustrated. We have a better handle on what their true skill set is, and the kids are not in the wrong places being frustrated. And we're actually going to talk next week about what IPA data means and how we can use that, not be scared to see where we need to improve. And
I thought
like
it was
that,
next
right?
week. It is next week. Perfect.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's like we planned that or something.
Weird.
Yeah. I had a parent a few weeks ago. Well, I think it was the beginning of the school year, parent-teacher conference. As I was explaining that we're now using the IPA and that we're measuring in certain modalities and how we do it, she was very grateful. And she said, I appreciate that you are measuring how they're doing in more than just one narrow area. And she doesn't speak another language, doesn't have any other language background other than her first language. And so it was nice to also see that the parents will agree once we explain it. It's like, yeah, that makes sense that they need to be assessed and evaluated and given feedback on more than one area. Our writing very much can influence our reading skills, and our reading skills can influence our listening and our speaking. And in our district, especially, speaking and listening have been consistently the lower performing areas, which is interesting because when it comes to communication, those are the two most common forms, right? For most people.
Right. Right.
And so the IPA, yeah, definitely is hopefully going to help us influence that. So let's look at the IPA itself then. What is it? We've mentioned the three components. Miles did, interpretive, interpersonal presentation. So let's get into the nitty gritty of that. I'm going to read a definition here. This comes from a book that ACTFL has called Implementing Integrated Performance Assessment. Our training at ACTFL was done by some of the authors of this book. It's a fantastic book. Even gives some samples of IPAs, complete IPAs, has some rubrics in there, gives overview what the IPA is, the rationale behind it, the history behind it, the research behind it. It's a fantastic book. In there it says, the integrated performance assessment measures three modes of communication, interpretive, interpersonal, and presentational. This assessment is used to determine the level at which learners interpret authentic text in the foreign language, interact with others using the target language in oral and written form, and present oral and printed messages to audience of listeners and readers. So, interpretive, interpersonal, and presentational, they generally will go in that order. In fact, it's specifically instructed that you do interpretive first and then interpersonal and presentational, as each of those modes will build on each other and provide the linguistic and language needs that the students have to have in order to really succeed on the other levels.
They say why the interpretive should be first?
Because it gives them a language base, is that they have a structure to work with and vocabulary and the information they need that will help them in the interpersonal when they negotiate meaning and on the presentational when they organize their thoughts and the language and present.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it goes, in, I mean, it goes into it a lot more design than that.
They're not having to produce anything to begin with, basically.
Right. You generally want to start them off producing right off the bat. You want to give them some background and some foundation to work with as they proceed.
Oh, and that makes sense. And because they're all centered on a similar theme.
All right, good news. Roger just walked in, so we are back to a full team.
How you doing?
Of podcasters. We're all healthy and well and alive and here.
Well, I've got a bit of a cold. Thanks for noticing.
Well, I wasn't really including you in the group anyway. So Roger's here just in time because Roger and I were the ones that went to this ACTFL conference and this training. So we just introduced what the IPA was. We're not going to talk about each of the modes. So we're going to start off with the interpretive, the interpersonal, and then we'll finish with the presentational. So in the interpretive mode, what it is we're looking at students' interpretation of meanings, including cultural meanings that may occur in writing and spoken form. So either they read it or they hear it or they view it. The interpretive form does not allow for negotiation of meaning with the writer or the speaker.
So negotiation of meaning. Now I know what that is, but
okay,
because so you told me at one point.
I have to do everything. Negotiation of meaning basically means there is a interaction between between two or more people to where perhaps maybe if I don't understand what Brandon is saying, which happens a lot, I can ask for.
I think he means your analogies, like your cookie analogy.
Yeah, your cookie analogy. Well, it was more the math analogy. But I can ask Brandon for clarification. I can say, can you repeat that?
Oh, okay.
Or can you simplify the question or what? So Brandon can then rephrase or redirect me. That's negotiation of meaning. We interact with each other to come to a common meaning of what we're trying to say.
So in the first mode, interpretive, there's none of that.
There's no negotiating. They have the text in front of them or the recording, and they have to go off of what's there with the questions that we give them to interpret whatever we're designing them to do.
So they can read it more than one time. They can listen to it more than one time. But
in the interpretive mode, yes.
They can't actually.
But we can't change it. We can't change the reading. Yeah. We can't change. All we can do is formulate the task to match the target that we want them to hit within the level.
Okay, now that makes
more sense.
Yeah.
The interpretive form, there's a lot of things we can have them read. Anything from newspaper articles, magazines. They can listen to a newscast, radio, anything varied like that. And then our task is to help them identify certain things that they heard or read.
Now, for me, going back to when you were given the definition of an IPA, the Integrated Performance Assessment, you mentioned that it needs to be authentic.
Yes, it does.
So that reading and listening, I would think it might be difficult to find as a teacher. I mean, we've been creating them. We struggle to find stuff.
We've created one or two, but recently more we found.
As far as IPAs, I mean, we've created those. But like,
well, the IPAs you're going to create on your own, but the text and the resources are going to be authentic. So the interpretive mode, it has to be an authentic text.
Authentic meaning?
Meaning it was made by somebody.
Not just a French person or Spanish person.
It was made by someone within a cultural group for individuals in that same cultural group.
Okay.
So in our meaning, it was made for somebody that speaks that same language, and the intent was that thing was made for those individuals that speak that same language. Roger, you have anything to add on top of that with the interpretive?
So with the interpretive mode, we want to measure or assess literal and interpretive skills. Literal meaning that basically the answers to the questions are right there in the text. As you read, you'll find the answers or stumble upon the answers, but the answers to all of the literal comprehension questions are right there in the reading. Interpretive now is asking students to go beyond just what's on the page or in the audio and kind of connect some dots, make some educated guesses or assumptions based on what they know, what they've experienced, things like that.
Read between the lines.
That's what I was going to say. Read between the lines.
Yeah. So like some examples of...
So I'm just thinking off the top of my head, as a teacher, when we ask our students, we try to work with our students just to make sure they're understanding. Their heads nod yes. That's right there in front of you. But their eyes say, I have no idea what you just said. So that's reading into it, right?
Yeah, would that could, be a that's good, right.
Could that be would be interpreting really what's the body language really saying.
Yeah.
What's interesting with the interpretive mode too, when we talking about the questions, when we first learned about the IPAs last year, the interpretive, one thing I struggled with the interpretive mode when we were first reading about it is the text is authentic. So it's in the target language and it's been written for individuals in that target language. But our questions are going to be in English. Well, or the student's first language is how we should word that, which for most of our students, that would be English. And I struggled with that at first because we're all about 90% or more in the target language. But the idea behind the interpretive mode is that we want to know how much of the text or the audio they understood. In order to do that, we want to make sure they understand exactly what they are looking for and they know exactly how to respond as best they can. And they have to do that in their L1.
Yeah, one of the things that was hard for me at first with the interpretive mode was you look at this authentic text and then like the level that it should go with, and it's easy to look at it and think, holy moly, my kids aren't going to get – they're not going to understand a whole heck of a lot of what's in there. So that's where the idea of modify the task and not the text means that the questions are very appropriate. We're only asking them questions that are going to help them further understand what's in there with a combination. Some keyword recognition words are going to be things that they should have been taught, things that they know, and they just need to find them in the text. And others are going to be targeted to measure if students can understand something through context. Can they understand this word based on what's around it? Because this word that I'm asking you to understand is going to help you further understand a greater portion of the reading. Students should learn as they take the assessment. There was a really good quote, a really good line in the training that we did where they said that too often we look at assessment as a stop sign. And that's what we do when learning has ended. And really, that's not the case. It's more of a yield sign or just pausing, looking around, assessing where we are before moving on. And students really should learn from the assessment. It's not just, okay, you've learned this, now show me that you have learned this. And that was something I really thought was cool with my level fours. The beginning of this week or end of last week, I gave them what I felt like was a pretty difficult reading, but I was really focused on my questions and the keyword recognition, giving them the ones that they should definitely know that we've been over, and then giving them a good amount of other words that were cognates or if not cognates, should be pretty easy to get from the context around it. And the kids, they really did. They learned a lot. I felt like it was an advanced level reading for an intermediate mid class, and they nailed it. Everybody hit, according to ACTFL standards, everybody hit intermediate mid or higher on their reading comprehension based on how ACTFL describes those ranges. And they learned a great deal. And I thought that was so cool. And that just was more evidence to me that this is worth doing. This is something good. This is what we need to do for kids.
I feel like this podcast is the same thing. Like this isn't a stop sign. This is like when I get here and start thinking about these things with you guys, I learn and I have more questions. And kind of in the spirit of admitting that we're learning as we're going here, I will say that us creating IPAs has been a long learning process and still is. And the interpretive section seems to be where we've had the most questions on how to do it correctly, right?
So I would agree by far.
Like a practical look at the interpretive is usually you have this authentic recording or authentic text of a variety of kinds. And then the questions we've changed a lot over time on how we assess that. You know, I guess what I'm saying is just this has been the most challenging section to create questions that really, test the level of our students accurately. And I mean, even one of the first questions is how advanced should the authentic source be compared to the level that your kids are at that you're testing? And what do we ask exactly? And just like Davin was saying, they're answering in English, and maybe that's kind of what has made this a little bit difficult, because we're not testing if they know English words, but we do have to get in there and figure out if they really understood this source. So my point really is just that this is the most challenging section, and I'm still learning and trying to understand based on the ACTFL and ACTFL standards and ACTFL instruction how this one is to be built. So
it is really hard. In our IPA for mid-year and end of year, right now we only have two sections out of the, I think, are there
nine.
Eight? There are nine sections.
Yeah.
There's technically nine sections to the interpretive mode on the IPA, which will take the students a great deal of time to do. We are slowly implementing that, probably section by section as we go along. But as Roger pointed out, as we're learning about the IPA, I like that fact too, that it's a learning tool, that assessment. Why not have your students learn new vocabulary, new structures while they're taking an assessment, while they're doing the assessment? And we actually kind of presented on that at BYU over the summer. We kind of altered our presentation once we realized what the conference was really all about. We changed modes a little bit and focused on how using an IPA and our assessments and authentic resources to really engage the learners and help them learn Spanish while at the same time we're actually assessing them for a grade, but also for the data that we need. So interpretive, I would agree with also with Brandon. It is pretty hard to create the tasks and the questions. It's hard, first of all, Miles mentioned early on, finding authentic resources is an extreme challenge. What I've really liked about what I've learned from the ACTFL training and this book that we have that we mentioned is that a lot of people will say, well, it has to be at the same level or just a level higher. That's actually not the wording that ACTFL uses. ACTFL says appropriate for their proficiency range. Something like that is what they said. I like the word appropriate because sometimes you can give a novice low student a novice high or intermediate low reading. And just, it depends on how well you do the tasks that they can actually gauge a lot out of that. Now you're not going to give a novice low student a scholarly article that's 40 pages long, obviously, but that's not to say that they can't be challenged and then they can't learn from that. But you do have to be very careful in the authentic text that you do choose, but even more particularly, as Brandon said, creating the tasks to appropriately assess what you want.
We talked to Brandon mentioned it last time. One thing we really focus a lot on is teaching the students skills. And aside from, I mean, they're learning Spanish, German, French, Chinese, Portuguese, whatever they're learning. But at the same time, they need to learn skills on how to read, how to listen, and really quick with the answering in English. When I first heard that that's what you do, I made an immediate change. It makes sense. And I ask my students every time we do a reading, okay, those questions were in English. Why do you think they were in English? And most people either nod their head when someone responds that just because you don't want us to copy and paste, and it's just helps you understand what we know versus what we can just copy out of there. So
the interpersonal mode, I'll read the definition here out of the book and we'll go into discussion. The active negotiation of meeting among individuals. Participants observe and monitor one another to see how their intentions and meanings are being communicated. Adjustments and clarifications can be made accordingly. Participants need to initiate, maintain, and at some levels, sustain the conversation. So that's basically what we're looking at interpersonal. In our district so far, again, if you've initialized the IPA or if you plan on doing the IPA, definitely start step by step. Don't go full haul and try to do a big IPA your first year. It is overwhelming. It is worth all the work, but it is definitely overwhelming. In our district, like we said, our interpretive is only two sections right now. Our interpersonal, we call it a simulated interpersonal. So we actually have a recording that they just kind of respond to in a speaking context. We use the language labs to have them talk. But the ideal IPA, you actually will have two of your students talk to each other and negotiate meaning and work out. Basically, a information gap activity is how the book really describes what you want them to do. Is each student that's working together will have information that the other student needs, and they ask questions and initiate a conversation, try to maintain a conversation as long as they can, trying to get whatever information that they need.
It's interesting. I wasn't sure how we were going to do that because I knew that we were doing simulated where you have the questions pre-recorded with space in between, and that's how our kids respond.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's another place where we're learning.
Yeah. And initially we started the simulated just because we wanted them to hear native speakers. We use native speakers to do our recordings, but a lot of it was also we were unsure of how well students would work together. I mean, I have my students talk to each other all the time in classes, and I'll do formative assessments where we'll go to the language lab and students will talk to each other and I'll assess them, give them feedback on that. But as far as the IPA went, we just had a lot of questions and concerns. But a big part of that is also a lot of our teachers just don't have the technology right now. So a lot of our schools have language labs, so we're almost there. But we have at least 8 schools, maybe a few more, that don't have language labs. So how do you record 2 students talking if you don't have a computer lab with headsets? But even then, that technology is very limited. So that's probably the main reason we're still staying in the simulated context.
Yeah, the few things that I saw with it were initially my thoughts were that if you have 2 students working with each other, and we kind of saw that in the presentation at ACTWL with Dr. Troyan.
They were 2 of his students that were doing this.
Yeah. Were they from Ohio State, or was that because he did some teaching at other places.
He didn't clarify where they're from. All I remember is one girl was a level 3 and the other girl was level 5, I think.
Okay.
So you had 2 different levels negotiating, meeting, and working out conversation.
Yeah. I had to step out for a minute, but before I stepped out, I remember the one girl looked nervous, was stumbling over her words, couldn't really string anything together. And so I had to step out and I leaned over to Davin and I said, I'm saying right now, novice high, tell me what they say when I come back. And that was my thinking, was that she just struggles to string anything together. She couldn't organize her thoughts and it didn't look like she was necessarily capable of going much further than what she was showing. So when I came back and asked Davin, I can't remember what you said, where they said that she was, but then they talked about that she did another one with another student and was just flying, just doing great. And that I think he said she was intimidated by
the higher level of the other student.
That's
and
right.
And the other student sometimes would finish thoughts for her. So it was really hard to gauge where the level 3 student was because she can't finish her thoughts, but sometimes the other student would kind of cut her off and finish it for her to help her out. And the student would usually agree, like, oh, yeah, that's what I was trying to say. So it was hard to really determine where she was.
Yeah. So that was when we were learning about this initially and putting things together for our first IPA. That was one of my concerns, is like, God, well, I know when I pair my students up, whether I try and plan it a certain way or if it's just random from the language lab, you never know how it's going to play out. Someone might dominate the conversation and not give the other student an opportunity to really show what they know and can do. There are all kinds of things that can happen there. Then I thought, well, if AP and IB are like the highest things that we do in the high schools and that's going to get them college credit, then maybe we should model ourselves after that and do a simulated conversation to help build those skills. And because like the fact that Davin said, like, how do you record students speaking if you don't have a language lab? How do you do that effectively? It's just really difficult. So those are some challenges that we've seen and some that we still have going forward that we'll need to find solutions to. But yeah, like you say, it's completely worth the time of implementation. It is a heck of a lot of work. But it's worth it because it's what's best for students. And that's what they talked about too, is implementing it at a sustainable rate.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do. Because if we threw all 9 sections in, we wouldn't get any sleep. We would never see our families on
our teaching. Our instruction would take a hit too. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. And just for all of us teachers, it would be really rough to just have all that thrown on our plates at one time. So yeah, we want to do it at a sustainable rate.
I would love to see us get to that official interpersonal, though. Like I said, my students talk to each other all the time, negotiate meaning. It's a matter of really teaching them the phrases to help them sustain the conversation. So teaching them how to say, can you repeat that, or come again, you know, whatever common phrases they can use. So it's one of the big concerns my students always have is, what happens if my partner doesn't understand me? It's like, well, they know the phrases, otra vez, or, you know.
Work it out.
What do you do in real life if someone doesn't understand?
Right. And that's the whole point of the conversation. If they don't understand, they'll ask you to repeat and then you can change your question. That's fine. That's still negotiating meaning. So I'm really excited when we can get to that point. And like I said, my students already do it in a lot of ways. And it's very beneficial to see how the students work out the language amongst themselves.
And I know with our, with the way we're doing it now with the simulated conversation to kind of model what the AP test has. Last year during the pilot and this year, we have a lot of teachers wondering, how many times can we play the audio for them? How many times should we play the audio for them? And our answer is because it has to be a conversation where it's kind of on the spot, with a
non-rehearsed, spontaneous.
They can only listen to it once, which is that's why it's a simulated conversation. But what's the official standing on that from IPA aficionados?
Well, I mean, they don't do simulated. So right. Their interpersonal is what they do in the moment. I'm assuming it's not that the students have a couple times to practice before you actually look at it. It's as real life conversation as you can get. And then you provide feedback on that conversation. So when you do your follow up or your next IPA or whatever comes next, they know what they can work on.
So what we're doing is our interpersonal task isn't what it should be.
No, it's not.
But a lot of that is because of
technology
other reasons,
restraints,
technology.
And just step by step, like moving in a sustainable
exactly.
rate. And that's, then, you know, and we've had that feedback from teachers saying, well, you know, that's not real interpersonal. We know.
And I don't know, I'm just,
we're getting there.
We understand that. I'm just trying to get that out there for other people who may be trying to implement it or those mm-hmm. listening in our district at how we're trying to implement this, that it's better than what we've had, but.
Right.
Yeah, but we know that we still need to do some
to go, and it's
logistical fidgeting.
This was part of our sustainable rate of implementation, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So lastly, and I want to emphasize once again, this generally will go interpretive, interpersonal, presentational. So each mode elicits the linguistic skills, background, knowledge, and foundation the students will need to move on to the next mode. So after interpersonal, we have the presentational, which is the creation of oral written messages in a manner that facilitates interpretation by an audience of listeners, readers, or viewers, where no direct opportunity for the active negotiation of meaning exists. So now presentational is, I guess in some ways we look at it as almost the opposite of interpretive. At one point they were interpreting an authentic text. Now presentational, they're creating that text or they're creating that audio.
For someone else to interpret.
For right. someone else to interpret and listen right. to. But the main factor that's still the same between interpersonal and presentational is there's no negotiation of meaning. It's just this time the students are actually producing what it is. One thing that as we did our pilot IPA and then as we did a lot more research on the IPA, we found the presentational section can take quite a long time because feedback is key. It's presentational. So our writing assessments in the past and our presentational section of the IPA still remains the same again. Just we're not trying to do too much at one time. We just have them do the presentational, give them, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, 50 minutes, depending on the writing task. And that's all they have to do that presentational. Well, technically, they should do the task. We should give them feedback. If it's a presentation, they should be able to present it in front of their peers, get feedback from them. They should be able to present it for us. We give them feedback before we do the actual assessed. I don't know how you would say that. Presentation. Score it. Yeah. Rate it according to their proficiency. So that was one thing that we learned from the pilot that you know, real IPA, the presentational section, they do research and they form rough drafts and there's a lot of work that goes into it. So, and that's another section where we're, you know, we'll have to implement that as the years come on.
And I think that's our next step as far as learning and training is learning more about the feedback portions. Feedback is a critical part of all three portions. The interpretive, like I said before, the questions should be modeled in such a way that as students complete those questions, they gain a greater understanding of the whole text and not just right. bits and pieces.
And the theme for the whole IPA.
Right. And so then because that information from the interpretive task is going to help them build the second portion, the interpersonal, we need to make sure that they have a very clear understanding of it. So we need to provide feedback and go through some things with them. That's one thing where I want to see more of what does that look like? When they're done with that, what do we do to make sure that they don't fudge their scores and go back and say, oh, I got that wrong. Now I need to correct that. And I assume that it's very different from just running through, here's the answers and this is what this means. I assume it's very different than that. And that's what I would like to see is what does that portion of feedback look like before then moving on to the interpersonal and then the feedback from the interpersonal. Like we saw, Dr. Troyan would sit down with the individual and they would listen to or watch their performance on the interpersonal and ask like, okay, so what do you need to do here? Or what's going on here? Tell me about this. You know, and they could talk about their struggles and explain the thought process that they were going through at that time, which is incredibly valuable to the student and to us, but more importantly to the student. And then, like you say, we move on to the presentational, and then, yeah, they need feedback on that, because presentational, those are the types of tasks where you're not on a timeline, where you have time to respond. Like an email, you might get an email. When I send an email, I don't expect a super fast response typically. And so when I get an important email that I really need to take my time on, I have all kinds of references available to me. And eventually we'll get to that point. Right now, what we're doing is kind of going with the traditional writing prompts that we've had and just giving like a good amount of time where they can maybe do a draft or do some comparison charts or whatever. But eventually we will move to where they get feedback, like you're saying.
Right. So the last section we want to talk about is a couple of general things about the IPA. One of them is that our IPA should support our curriculum and should fit in line, but our IPAs also, as well as our curriculum, should be within the interests of our students, meaning our topics or our themes should be things that either students are interested in, or I would add to that, that our students are going to experience in real life. A lot of times they're not always interested in every single thing, especially if you get the range of junior high students to high school students, as we use the same IPA for all of them. Just the different walks of life that everybody's in, it's hard to say like all of our students are interested in this theme or this topic. They might not be, but they may be interested in another one that we do further down the line. So it's important to choose one that's within their interests, but also choose those that are going to be really real life scenarios, things that they're going to experience or have to know about eventually, whether they're interested in it or not. You guys have any thoughts on that? Part of that was my opinion. Part of that's coming out of the book, but I agree our students should be really interested and love the learning and everything and should be vested in what we're teaching them. But, you know, I know a little bit about politics, but I don't like politics, right? But I understand the essential things that I need to know as a citizen of the country, things like that. So I'm not necessarily interested, but I realize that I have to do things within politics. I think that's the same way we have to teach or treat our kids in our classroom is, yeah, we should play to their interests, but at the same time, it's more important to make sure they have skills and knowledge and a good background of real-world situations.
Yeah, oh. I'll slip this line in here that I really liked from our presentation with Dr. Francis Troyan from Ohio State and Bonnie Adair Houck from University of Pittsburgh, I think it was. But they said that tests teach in their form and content what adult challenges we value. And I just thought that was really interesting because we work with kids, but we want them to wear.
I'm going to sneak in. In my mixed higher level classes, we're doing a project right now talking about celebrations and what the cultural significance of celebrations are. And they're going to be emailing French speaking countries, the governments, and trying to find out more information about the cultural significance there. And I had a few minutes left of class today, and in English, I just stopped them and said, okay, what's the purpose of this? Why are we doing this? And they would give reasons. Well, it's an assignment, or we're trying to find out more about the French culture and countries. Okay, keep going. How does it affect you if you don't remember a lick of French the rest of your life? Why is it important to learn and to find out more about other peoples and cultures? And it took a little bit. I had to ask it a few different ways and a few different times, but finally I had a student, and then after the student spoke, the rest of them got it. They finally understood that the more you understand about other cultures, and we know this as language teachers, the more you understand about other cultures, the more you can understand about their celebrations and why they have them and why they think they're important. The more you don't necessarily have to agree with everything they do, but the more you can be understanding and not just be a hateful person. You can understand why people do certain things certain ways and why they're different. And as you said that quote the first time off air, when you said it in my head, it could be because I have a cold, is just what the bleep is this guy talking about? But as you said it, it just hit me when I was talking to.
We might need to put that part off air. You know what I mean?
We have a dumb button. No, because we're not live. It just hit me that was basically it. It was a life lesson for those students that it's not about. Yes, it's about the report we're doing and trying to learn in French how to talk about these celebrations and why it's important for the community. But really, when it comes down to it, it's understanding other cultures that they're different, and they have reasons for their eccentricities. Is that a way to put that? For their differences? And anyway, it just hit me when you were talking and you were reading that the second time. that's what I was doing, is I value that approach in life, and I want my students to do the same.
Yeah, we do want to focus on the here and now, but we also want them to be lifelong learners. We want them to be good citizens. We want them to be global citizens, and they need to be learning lifelong lessons all along the way, too. So
it's always interesting to me in class. A lot of times I'll teach my students a phrase in Spanish, and it'll be different from how we say it in English. And they'll say, like, well, that's weird. Why do they say it that way? Why can't they say it? And a lot of times people will be offended, like, oh, why do people think that way? It's like, well, they're kids. They're still learning, grew up within their own cultures. So I really like taking that opportunity to teach them. Be like, it's not weird at all. It's just fine.
Considering how many odd phrases we have in English.
Right. And it's like, they may say the same thing about us. We have different values, different ways of expressing emotion and different ways of communicating. I'm helping you understand how certain groups within Spanish language do certain things.
It's culture, right?
Yeah, it's culture, right?
And a lot of people, and this is a totally different thing, but a lot of people are sad with, quote, the way the world is going, but I feel like there are a lot of benefits, and in some respects, the world is getting much more accepting and understanding of other people.
I can say that I have a lot of students, former students, that I get the opportunity to hear from on a pretty regular basis. No, I have a lot of former students who have been called to serve missions for their church, and almost every single one is serving a Spanish-speaking mission. And what I think is so cool, and every single one of them has referenced at some point in time in their emails that I'm able to see, is that they hit the ground running so much more than many others do. And what a big deal that is, that they can express themselves, that they can understand others, that they can show an example of an American who is educated to some degree, at least, on their culture and their language, and that they can have somewhat intelligent conversation with. And I just think, man, by the time they are done, they're going to be such good representatives of what we hope that more and more of our students will be as they go out in the world with whatever they're doing, whether it's giving a missionary service for their church or in the work that they will be doing. But I just see that as such a bright spot, and it's such a positive. And it just makes me so happy to know that I'm having some impact on these individuals, and they're just going to do great things as they get older.
To wrap up, I want to read a line that I took from the book that I really, really liked. And I'm hoping we as educators, teachers, foreign language teachers specifically, we can really take to the classroom. It said, an IPA is only as good as the instruction that leads up to it. That's one thing I really learned from the conference that we went to in the training, is that the IPA is going to be a great tool for our students to learn the language as they're being assessed, to receive the feedback they need to master it more, to hit the targets and the standards that we've set in place. It's going to be great for teachers to have the data on those students, to understand how to guide those students. But more importantly for the teachers, which will also directly benefit the students, is hopefully it improves our instruction. Because the IPA takes a backward design approach, which pretty much everybody in education knows what that is now, is take your targets, you see what targets you want them to hit, how are you going to assess that, and then you design your activities and your instruction. Well, the IPA is only going to be as good as the instruction that leads up to it. So I really look forward myself personally to having this IPA mid-year, end of year, see where my students are, and adjust my instruction to make sure I can enhance them as much as I can to the next level. Because it's a lot of times, assessment is a hard word for a lot of teachers, mostly because, well, federal, state, there's a lot of tests that are kind of pushed on us or pushed on students, however you want to look at it. So assessment is a hard word, but if we really think about it, as Roger reminded us from our training, assessment is more of a yield sign. It's a place to see where you are in order to help you get where you need to go, but it's not a stop sign. And assessment really should be used to influence our instruction, because our instruction really is going to be measured by how well these students are performing the IPA. And as mentioned in the beginning, we don't want anybody to take that personally. All of us are going to find holes in our instruction. All of us are going to find things that we need to improve on. Hopefully we can work together for the benefit of the student. And that's the whole center of what we're trying to do with the IPA, why we've adopted it here in the school district. It benefits the students, but also hopefully it benefits the teachers.
I would agree. There was a line directly from the training that talked about how the more experienced or comfortable we get with IPAs, the more it's going to directly influence and impact our teaching. In the ideal IPA, students do a task, we review things, make sure, ensure understanding, move on to the next. And there's this pattern of modeling, having the students work on something, reviewing, having students go back and do something else, and modeling, and then having students do something, then reviewing, and it's just this cycle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode. We want to emphasize again that we are new to the IPA. I actually found out what the IPA was last year. We've done a lot of research and a lot of work since then. It's a new tool for us. We're doing it step by step as sustainably as possible. We're really looking forward to what we're going to do. We have mentioned that it is a lot of work to change, but once it's in place, it won't be quite as much work, but the benefit to our students is going to be huge. So as you've noticed, hopefully as you listen throughout the episode, you may have noticed we are pretty new at this, but we hope to generate more conversation. We will do follow-up episodes about the IPA, our progress with them. Next week's episode is going to follow up with how to use data for assessments and not take it personally, et cetera.
And as a side note here at the end, first person to comment or respond on Twitter, not associated with the podcast, we will send an actual pineapple in honor of Psyche, James Roday, and Dulé Hill to you. And a candy bar,
strapped
if I didn't say that.
To that will be a king-size candy bar.
Exactly.
So we thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. And I will say adios.
Hasta luego.
Auf Wiedersehen.
A plus.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.
If you're listening out there, Sean Spenstar and Burton Guster, Burton, MC, clap your hands.
We know you are.
We know you're listening, but we'd love to have you on just to talk about the 80s and how that affected your educational life. No, I don't know. But
any foreign language, world language education you may have had.
Exactly. And also, well, I think, are they Canadian? No, wait, Dulé Hill. Guster, as you may know him, he's
Dulé Hill's actually half Mexican.
He is? I thought it was Jamaican or something.
Not Dulé Hill, sorry.
Not Jamaican. Jamaican?
James Roday.
Yeah?
His last name's actually Rodriguez. They changed
really?
It to Roday, yeah.
I thought...
We're not putting this on the podcast, right? So
you're full of it.
I think
his dad or his mom is Mexican.
I think Dulé Hill, I don't want to say Jamaican, but I think he's...
Some Latino country.
He's from the island area, or his parent is, or something.
His parents are. I think he was born in the U.S., but...
Yeah. Anyway.
He's a talented guy, Dulé Hill.
Yeah, I've seen him in a few things.
Man, tap dance, he's hilarious.
that was a great episode, him tap dance.
Yeah.
Lassie on there tap dancing.
So funny. A tap dance, but he tap dances, he sings.
Yeah.
He had some other skill. I was like, man, this guy can do a lot of stuff. I can't remember what it was now.
We got our research team on this James Roday thing.
That's right.
We're waiting for the verdict.
Parents, Jim and Irene Rodriguez.
Ah, whoa. You all mean
that
a lot of junk.
That doesn't automatically mean anything.
I didn't disagree with
you. He was born
you.
In San Antonio, Tejas.
Yeah, but his line is Mexicano, I'm pretty sure.
And as he's looking that up, I just want to tell you, just like Psych, in every one of our podcast episodes, there's been a pineapple. There hasn't actually. Maybe the first person to respond, we will UPS you a pineapple.
Is of Mexican descent. Look at you.
You guys doubt me? I'm really offended.
It was only Roger that doubted you.
It's all of a sudden Lemke doesn't know what he's talking about.
It wasn't doubt. It was it was a yearning to confirm.
I wanted
truth.
To learn while I was.
I just didn't appreciate your guys' feedback.
I will be willing to buy the pineapple if someone pays the shipping. Shoot, I may even pay the shipping. The first person that responds on our comments on our Twitter or our webpage, I will send you, in honor of Psyche,
I got to get another Spanish fruit.
Now you get a king-size candy bar and a pineapple.
Yeah, Welker will still throw in a candy bar.
The strap
the candy
stands.
Bar to the pineapple.
I will put a pineapple in there, and we will overnight that to you 2 days. Well, I don't want the pineapple to go bad. They probably have special packaging for food. I don't know.
Are we
Wait,
just
can you
time
ship
now to
fruit
get to
50 people?
Minutes?
You can. I've had somebody mail.
Well, because if they're in California, don't they get mad at you for bringing fruit across the state?
My science teacher, when he went to Hawaii, he just mailed the coconut to himself. He just wrote the address
That's
on the coconut.
I've had a coconut to me from.
Because they come in like, they actually drop in big shells.
Yeah.
And so he just wrote his name and his address on the shell and just dropped it off at the post office and they just shipped it to
post office. Do you think they use an African or European swallow? They get it, you know, they just attach it with a strand of creeper.
Laden or an unladen?
No. I like Devin.
How do you know so much about James Rudy?
Oh, this is quite the tangent. Where were we anyway?
I have no idea.
You were talking about time.
We were talking about time and the waste that we just had.
I think we need to leave this waste in here somehow, because I love psych that much. We've got to have psych in here.
I didn't know you were a psych guy.
I'm a big, yeah. I wasn't to begin with.
Really? I didn't think you liked it either.
It took me a while.
You got to get, the first season's good now once you understand what's going on. The first season was hard for me to get through until I got through 2 through 6, and I was like, oh, and then I went back
to my wife started watching
it
first with her sister. And the first couple of years we were married, it was like, another psychic show? This is stupid. You know what's funny? Because he's not really psychic. He's just pretending. Blah, blah, blah. Stupid. The Mentalist, which is funny because he... Anyway. No, I'm not. It's good stuff. Burton in his nicely shaped noggin.